Let's do the holiday spirits.
I wonder if that feeds into all the war on this planet. Like, because people have to have something to sort of puff themselves up. You're more of a self than you have somebody that fights you. When you have an enemy, you're rallying your forces. There's more.
You know, what occurs might have absolutely nothing to do with what we refer to as human ego. Because human ego is not an origin. It's a symptom. So no matter where you look to try to attribute, right, a causal relationship, you're going to fail.
A symptom of what?
That's an interesting question. What is it a symptom of? I mean, human ego, whatever we refer to it as, is not an origin. It's not source. It's symptomatic. Yes? Of identification and, you know, life, proliferation, virus, bacteria, mitochondria, DNA, sunlight, photosynthesis, nitrogen-fixing bacteria, Krebs cycle. And what's that a function of? The periodic table? A sentiently animated periodic table? And what's the periodic table? What is it? If you keep dropping, right, where are you going? Right, the physicists drop down further, you could say, than the shaman. In terms of explanation, right? The shaman goes so far, it's like, go to the underworld, go to the outer world, go to heaven, go into the dirt, go into the tree, you know, get your fix, and that might help you and your tribe. But the shaman doesn't go into the periodic table, right? They don't go into photonic impression, atomic and subatomic and sub-subatomic structure. So what you call human behavior or the lamentable disappointment of war, right, of systematic violence, whether perpetrated on the planet, on the animals, on the plants, on each other, on the atmosphere, on the oceans, right?
It's hard to say.
Who are you going to point to?
It seems like it's being done by individuals, but it is too complex to even have a central point of view.
Yeah, I mean, even individuals is bizarre.
So, I read something this week about the universe seeks order, though. Like, there's, at the subatomic level, like chaos.
Right.
And eventually, chaos seeks order.
Yeah, well, it appears to. I mean, because let's say you are an organized field, right, made out of chaos, because you have an apparently sustainable life cycle of, you know, let's hope 100, and let's hope you live till 120 if you're interested, right? So you are a great example of a remarkably stitched together or, you know, harmonically attracted organized field made out of chaos. And you, as a, you know, as a body, you don't last. So it only appears that chaos at the level of the proton, or wherever you want to look, right, adheres to create what appears to be sustainable form to express, at least in this case, as a biological effervescence. Right? So chaos looks like biological sustainable effervescence. And then there's consciousness and everything else that we name, which is part of the, you know, the entirety of a presently appearing miracle. Here you go. It's completely organized.
You should be like a college professor teaching a course in college.
Yeah. Okay.
Why not?
He would be outstanding.
I mean, look at the nature of how you track your own consciousness, meaning your awareness of your present experience, and the things that you may say internally or externally about your awareness of present experience. It's very mushy. It's chaotic. It's unpredictable. It's darting. It's unreliable. So even though you may appear, any of us may appear as a reliable biologic form that you can dance with, right, eat with, if you're lucky, make love with, right? Still, I know, pie in the sky. But still, when you look at the intimacy of your present experiencing, it's bananas. Sweetly, crazily, intimately, bananas. And we have to assert or insist upon a certain kind of durability of my persona, my likes, my beliefs, my dislikes, my behavior, my justifications. And I have to put a lot of effort into saying I'm still me from day to day. Or within second to second, moment to moment. We put a lot of effort into it, thinking that we're walking around, right, being ourselves. Reliably being ourselves. But when you really look at it, it's like, what? Why are you the way that you are? I mean, look, you know, the personalities. Why is anybody the way that they are? By choice? I mean, do you remember going to, you know, a candy store of some kind that said, well, you're just about to be conceived, but before your parents get together, we'd like to give you a checklist so that you can piece together your just ridiculous personality.
I did some shitty picking.
Yeah, you did some really shitty picking.
Me too. High five to everybody.
Welcome to the club there, yeah.
Do-over. That's why we all think we're being punished.
You're just a goddamn do-over.
That's why we all think we're being punished, and there's a thing as karma, because we're like, I don't know, something must have went wrong. And
yeah. I mean, we are all do-overs. Oops. We're all big like, oops, I selected these traits? Jesus, God, or my parents? So that all the suffering that could be imposed upon me from their, you know, horrific, narrow-minded selfishness and their profound generosity could create the likes of me? Egads!
I could live in a time of severe plague, whatever, destruction.
So wait a minute. I work with a bunch of rocket scientists.
Okay.
And they're really good, sharp, smart people that know your shit.
Yeah.
They seem to be able to take chaos,
right,
and put it together really good.
Yeah, yeah.
Hold it together, and even if you're chaotic outside of that way, you can't even see how they can do this shit.
Right.
You will operate in their field.
Yes.
And they're pretty amazing. At least they might perceive in something wrong. Like, I'm not seeing the true chaos here. I'm perceiving,
right,
something wrong because I think they don't have any shit. Like all this shit. These guys know how to deal with every chaos.
Yeah. What's the question?
What's this saying?
Yeah,
just saying. You made me think that, because I always think of somebody at work, I'm like, God damn, how can you keep everything together like that pizza so party?
Yeah.
Is he insane inside?
You'll have to ask him. We'll bring him here. Bring him here. We'll check it out.
He's from the Los Angeles.
Yeah, yeah. We'd be happy to ask him.
Well, that right there should
tell him.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, a reminder.
Talk to him, the guy. It's like from the Los Angeles. Yeah, he's actually from the Los Angeles. Probably my time.
How is everybody?
Are you okay? We're good.
Yeah.
Doing all right, yeah.
Where's your job? What do you do at Boeing? Instrumentation for flight testing and flight development. Chinook aviation. Instrumentation is when they want to see how much vibration and stress is on this helicopter when it goes into extreme movements, and can we develop something that's stronger? How can we get rid of resonant things happening here or there that may be causing cracking to happen here? All kinds of stuff. A huge amount of stuff. No, it's amazing. It's like how the hell did I get
holding it all together?
So it's like,
how do you hold it together under stress?
Shit, but I am amazing. Like,
it's tough.
Well, yeah, we just randomly think those people are doing better than us. It's like, how do you randomly hold together your, you know, insane, ridiculous, synthetic life?
It just does it.
Well, I was talking to a couple of companies last week, and one of the rest of the day is
operating. Jeff, are we going to have to change this? He's kind of joking. The one was like acting out, and he's like, are we going to have to change this?
Just like
the joke of the telecast.
Where is it located?
Yeah. I'm at a point where I'm trying to observe which personality is inhabiting me in the morning.
Yeah, it's
from second to second.
It's kind of astonishing.
Very.
Yeah. Really among assholes, but I've never a coherent self. It's never gonna happen.
No, it's really not coherent at all.
I think that's the key, is just to learn to stop trying to make that happen. If there were.
Some people seem to look more coherent than others. But we don't really know. We really can't tell what's going on over there.
It's just our experience. We've made up whatever. It's exactly our experience, and we've made up whatever on them that we, however it is, you know, you've made it up. I don't know, right? If you want to be like them, if you feel like they have it more together than you do.
Yeah, if you're the only one here, if your experiencing is all that there is, then, right, your karmic circus is all this. This is your karmic circus.
So there's no way you're going to create a coherent other.
No.
Even though you might choose to see them that way.
No. Yeah, no, they're just apparitional appearing in you. Yeah, you can name them as coherent and then be jealous.
That's
appearing in you.
But 9 times out of 10, if you know them for a long time, you'll watch that coherency erode.
Why shortchange? Why only 9?
The veil falls off.
I have not seen.
Why only 9 times out of 10?
Oh, right. 10 times out of 10, yeah. All of a sudden, oh, they weren't as together as I thought.
Your imagination is garbage. It's 10 out of 10. You're wrong.
It's always
that's the guarantee.
That's the guarantee.
That was like,
yeah, and it's
so
not, and it's not being wrong as a, you know, an insult.
No.
Yeah, yeah. You're just making
arbitrary.
It up.
Yeah, it's very arbitrary.
And that remarkable capacity to make up, right, is also capable of all of the artifacts of our so-called lives.
It's pure magic.
It is pure magic. I mean, that a Chinook flies, or that you can stress test it and improve it, right, is pure magic. That we got to the moon or a landscape somewhere in Arizona, doesn't matter, right, is pure magic. The consciousness of the engineer that's capable of working with arithmetic algorithms and tools to creative tools, right, interactive tools, constantly improving and sent more sensitive tools to evaluate stress in systems, to come up with improved material handling material and composites, so that a helicopter of that weight with that many people in it carrying this many weapon systems can make a sharp right turn and get to Kansas. Whoa! Yeah.
Not to mention steamy eggs on Sunday nights arrived just
in all the people that support all that.
Steamy eggs are the same.
Yes.
The food that show up.
Military industrial.
This is what we're looking at. I mean, you're looking at an incomprehensible miracle showing up at your feet nonstop. And 10 times out of 10, anything you say about it is not correct.
So wait, I'm always, with myself, I'm always like, damn, my life is terrible.
Well, that's because of those crappy choices that you made before you were conceived.
It didn't look like I made them before I was conceived.
Yeah, I know. It's just a joke.
No.
You're just fucked up. You had nothing to do with it. You and your life are fucked up. Yeah, so?
No. That's an evaluation, in a sense. And that's not even correct.
I get the best bet.
The best bet?
That's right.
That's important to you.
Join the F troop.
Okay, you can have it.
Do you work full-time at this job?
That's why he's so funny like that.
Yeah. He's
gone to his head.
Now, I finally got 16 days off this Christmas. I'm insane most of the time.
What a surprise.
No, not like you guys. Really insane.
No, really. All right.
Fuck the deal. What they give us new data systems and shit to learn. We can't possibly learn. I'm a level 3 in 2 years of school.
It's all right, Mike.
Shit.
So you fake it.
They pay me an incredible lot for the level that I'm at. Like, oh my God, ridiculous amount of money.
Are there any
of them? And it's like, well, yeah. I'm not that
working.
I'll tell them to divert your pay.
I have a scientific.
So you don't feel intimidated. It's like, no, I don't deserve that much.
Yep.
Monster-ass company that should split itself into 10 divisions, and that's just one facility.
What's nice is, if we take something seriously, we generate it. If we take it lightly, we generate it. But that generated with that we is not really something definable as something coming to us out of it. Right? That's the funny thing about it, right? Like, we have chosen or picked, or, yeah, right, where that come from?
Wherever you begin, which is a myth and mystery, of course, wherever you appear to begin when applying your affection and your attention to your experience, you're just going to end up in a bottomless regression where you're not going to be able to find anything responsible for how this is appearing to you, including yourself. Nothing. You won't find anything that's responsible. I mean, on Earth, right? On Earth, we would like to say that. Your birth, whatever that is responsible. Your RNA, DNA. Nurture and nature, right? The food your parents ate, whether they were smokers at the time you were conceived. And how far back do you want to go? Genghis Khan, Lucy, the early primate, the Atlanteans. You want to go back to the Atlanteans as precursors for so-called modern society? Or Neanderthal, or Cro-Magnon,
or pre-planet?
Yeah, right. You want to go pre-planet? How far back do you want to go to hold responsible for your present moment, for your present experience? And is there a genuine, whatever that might suggest, link between what you imagine to be the ultimate genesis and your present experience? And there is none. There is no actual link between any genesis story you tell, whether it's the Big Turtle or a Stephen Hawking ruse, and this present moment. Now that's strange, because most of us, when we occupy our, call it, pedestrian consciousness, that pedestrian consciousness is loaded with a bunch of presumptions that, we've already better default.
Yeah, baseline assumptions.
Based on, an entire conflagration of assumptions or presumptions or belief or identity systems, most of which are no longer, and perhaps never were, available to you as present consciousness. So you're symptomatic. This is strange. I mean, one wants to be in control, successful, altruistic, spiritually accomplished, of service to the community, of humanity, perhaps recognized by your peers for the great sacrifices that you've made so you can have the Pebble Hill Peace Prize, right? Right? That's what you want. Notoriety, security, a better, psychiatric life, right? we're consumed, overwhelmed with falsification of records, impersonating an officer, and then placing demands on the beatitude of reality that it should respond to my supplications. And all of this is absolute myth. So as long as you want the appearance of your consciousness to go a certain way, you're screwed. You're living in myth. Which is great. You know, I mean, if you have a job you can get to, some disposable income to, you know, get a new or used car, keep your internet pipe on, your cell phone working, you know, and your HMO just barely affordable, you're good to go.
Don't get me started on that.
Yeah, see? It's easy, right? I mean, we're all sitting ducks. And
the line
ahead.
Is stretched so taut.
Oh, yeah. We are a very, you know, quality
we are on
stress.
The edge.
Yeah, yeah. Right. Right. Within a very fuzzy, you know, cuddle party. Don't get me started on cuddle parties, I know.
Yeah. Just waiting for someone to make one false move.
Yeah, that's right. Hey!
Scene's got a mean left.
Really?
Didn't you read the rules of the cuddle party before you came?
Yeah, right. So you see, this hallucination, which we occupy with, you know, great affection and needs for attention seeking or attention giving, right, is a total myth that's been, may I suggest, imposed upon you.
So what are you supposed to do? Just drop everything? I mean, in the moment.
Have you tried it?
You can't, kind of, but no, I don't know.
Well, try it.
Drop everything? Like, I'm judging this or that, whatever.
Well, you have to drop that.
I'm making these demands currently on looking at this person and what I want. And,
right. Drop it. I mean, don't stop doing whatever it is that you're doing or that is occurring. But you could play with the yogic adventure of dropping any association that you have with it. Or even if there are associations occurring, you could play with dropping any belief or investment in those associations. If psychological time appears to be confounding you, you can play with dropping it.
Just see that it's just showing up so fast.
Yes.
It's like I just glance over at someone and thoughts just occur. Fat and Ugly pops in my head is not my control. I'm like, sorry.
We don't have a date.
Oh, no. This was from the other night, actually.
Isn't it curious to see that your present experience, whatever that suggests, before you carve it into something, you know, turn a block of ice into an ice statue, before you carve it into something, your present experience is a non-dual immediacy. Unbroken. This is an unbroken immediacy.
You say carve into a block of ice. Let me tell you, I can make shit out of anything.
Or turn shit into something?
No. Make shit out of anything.
Well,
just like everything goes wrong.
Oh, I see. Right.
Draw it to me.
Yeah. Well, that's a magical power. Yeah, put it to good use. Have them drop you behind enemy lines and then turn the enemy into shit.
Like the what was that movie where the loser would sit next to the winner at the card table?
Yeah.
The cooler.
Yeah, the cooler. Yeah.
You could be the cooler.
Yeah, you're the cooler.
Somebody's really hot and they're taking the whole casino. And you sit next to
Mike.
Great job.
what we're aiming at, what we're playing with, is a direct encounter that you have with yourself. which is absolutely unencumbered by your own imagination, your own presumptions, your own certainties, your own self-assessment, your own story. It's about discovering and becoming acquainted with the immediacy of being before the overlay.
That's a good description.
And the immediacy of being, which is instantaneous, does not process, is your primacy. Immediacy, unprocessable, non-processing immediacy is what this is. And it's capable, clearly, right, of telling quite a few fairy tales.
Why what?
Quite a few fairy tales. Instantaneously. So even what's appearing in your loquacious consciousness, meaning the thinking and speaking and self, right, inner dialogue part of you, is also miraculously appearing. Not through choice, not through selection, not through premeditation, but just you are miraculously appearing in and as yourself. And curiously punctuated by what we would call your recognizable persona or style of hanging out. Well done. Well played. You are well played.
It's so slippery. It's just funny.
Well, it's impossible.
Yeah.
I mean, what's appearing right now and how it's appearing and how it's felt is, you could say, impossible. So, you know, slippery and the same, right?
Yeah.
It's the same. Because there's no way to take anything that's appearing hostage or prisoner. Really no way to do it. We like to imagine that my shelves and my drawers and my automobile and my home safe, my basement, my garage, my shed, you know, are all stacked neatly with the artifacts of my life, so I've got this. Right? But you don't, because your primacy is slippery and non-dually instantaneous and following its own nose. You claim nose after the fact, but it's following its own nose and just appearing as you. And when we claim nose, right, that's the same as all the suffering. Because claiming knows, meaning, you know, that you're sniffing this out, you're the chooser and the decider and the doer and the receiver and the organizer, is absolute myth. And that's how the atmosphere, the aroma of suffering, right, gets going. We've all seen really good wicked witches, right, cast a spell of green smoke with, you know, mad goblins laughing behind the glass, that turn you into kind of a, you know, pathetic, right? Pathetic apparition. And that's what you got. The moment you take yourself or this seriously, that you know what it is, how it is, why it is, and that you're pressing the buttons to make it better, you're living under the witch's spell. And you will find some packets of happiness, loneliness, despair, paralysis, trauma, ecstasy. You'll find all kinds of packets of profound experience.
From second to second, they don't make any sense.
From second to second.
Still tie them together. They're
right.
Totally incongruent.
Yes.
And you'll contradict yourself every second.
And that's all you can do. That's right. Right. The moment there's wind coming through your teeth, you're a contradiction. But the moment that there's, you know, fractal neuronal stimulation going on in your so-called neocortex, it's imagination. Because this immediacy as an intimate, non-dual entirety or totality is not processing itself. And you know this. What we call our identity is a myth. It's a mirage.
It's a lie.
we're in control of things.
Well, it's a lie that you are what you think you are. That you could even possibly have any interest in control is a lie.
Usually that identity and the interest in control, it's all about, you know, you create that eye so you have some handle on this amazingly.
It's a realm. Yeah, it's a Bardo. That's right. Identity, consciousness, I, me, my, and then trying to find the levers and the buttons to control it is just myth. And it might be possible, as you explore the nature of your own myth, explore the nature, the texture, and the sensuality of your own consciousness, that you might discover a kind of relaxation. The relaxation from identification, from remedy.
You mean as opposed to, holy shit, I better do something about this.
Yeah, that's right. The end of panic.
And also relaxation.
Yeah. But even relaxation is, you know, just a metaphoric way station. Because there appears to be the myth of you as a suffering and independent creature, we'll use the word, let's say, relaxation, right, to give ourselves a little bit of a break. But relaxation is not real. It's a temporary or actually superficial way station. Because what you really are, you know, which may sound grandiose, is, you know, relaxation is, you know, not that important.
But we're preferring instability. So there's no state that's...
But unstable suggests that there could be or there ever was genuine stability. You see, you're not unstable. You're just miraculously appearing. Yeah. To what we call an ego structure, you could say, yeah, baby, instability. But why trade, you know, one myth which might be a, you know, a frightening or an intimidating myth to impose upon another myth? Which is how,
which
right?
Is what, how we function.
That's how we function.
Yeah.
Right? We're myth traders. We go to the trading floor every morning. Some famous or successful business person rings the bell, and then we start myth trading with ourselves to try to get improved returns on our investment. Yeah. You could say that what appears as, you know, equity markets, bond markets, farm and industrial markets, oil and futures markets all over the world are simply a reflection of the myth trading that we're doing internally. Right? All of the representation, whether it's pork bellies, corn, wheat, gold, equities, right? Anything that you can get your hands on as a future or a purchase or a stock or an investment, all of that abstraction is a luminous expression of our inner abstraction. That we've assigned value, right, and ownership rights to commodities, real and imagined. Just ask, you know, Chase Bank and J.P. Morgan and Bear Stearns and all those guys. Because that, whatever that crash may have been, was all through repackaged imagination. Mortgages upon mortgages upon mortgages where there was no underlying asset or value. And the entirety of the, you know, the ecology of humans, whether financial or in any other discipline that you may look, what you're seeing is the radiant expression of abstraction management.
Because the individual has gotten completely
abstraction
overblown.
Yeah.
I mean, once we got beyond mere survival,
it all became abstraction upon abstraction upon abstraction.
Okay.
And that just is multiplied.
Yes, there you go. Yeah. So when you look at sacred geometry,
I hope I can eat today. It's so far beyond that.
Yeah. When you look at, you know, the principles of sacred geometry, they're not just ley lines, you know, on the earth or electromagnetic fields underneath the Great Pyramids. Sacred, you know, Sedona-like vortices in a place. Sacred geometry also, we could say, is a metaphor that conducts or can be looked to for abstraction. Chaos appearing as form, as chaos appearing as durability, as geometric, psychophysical, fractal, cosmically harmonic structures that can be relied upon, right, through the weird window of experiencing. So it turns out that the stock market in pork bellies is no different than a hexagon appearing on the top of Saturn. As above, so below. So this harmonic of chaos adhering, it's a kind of a self-adhesion, like a water molecule has adhesion to keep itself, ha-ha, I'm water, ha-ha-ha, right? So it requires a certain kind of esprit de corps, adhesion, to keep itself, right, organized. And what is responsible for that adhesion? Well, the periodic table, right? Electrons, protons, neutrons. And what's responsible for that? Well, we don't know. So you look at the entire morphic plenum or morphic canvas, and you can say, oh my goodness, you know, geometric replication is all this is, as form, including human behavior. Pork bellies, stock market, war, shots to the moon, sharp right-hand turns in a Chinook. It's all the same. And so your consciousness and how you're experiencing your consciousness is also a, say, symptom of sacred geometry, of morphic harmonics. Because you are made out of bacteria, viruses, human DNA, RNA, mitochondrial DNA, RNA, which is not human. You are a nitrogen-fixing, consciousness-fixing bizarritude of incredibly complex mechanisms with, right, really, really, really tiny micrograms that can create havoc in your biologic system. You're unbelievable.
Movement. Everything kind of feels good. Because all these little electrons, all these little protons, all these little neutrons, and then, or these little things that,
yeah,
you know, these things.
We call those.
Yeah.
But everything is movement, right?
Well, sure. Shimmering. Yeah, let's say you play around with meditation or a higher power contemplation, you know, whatever you're into, you start to relax and chill out, you might start to notice that your present experience is punctuated, or you can see an underlayment is just shimmering. You can feel yourself directly, palpably, as shimmering. Mind appears in shimmering. Body appears in shimmering. Time, space appear as either practical or impractical impositions in shimmering. So you're not, you know, what, the product of the biologic. The biologic is an expression through sacred geometric adhesion and harmonic expression of shimmering. And the shimmering, strangely, you're not going to find a genesis for it. You won't find a genesis for the shimmering. You won't find an author. You won't find a particle. As small as the Higgs boson is, or as hard as it may be to find, as short-lived as it is, it is not substantive. It's not causal. It itself is another symptom of the shimmering.
Yeah,
And as you begin to feel yourself as shimmering, not as a negotiating persona, you're going to have symptoms. Don't ask me what those are. That's up to you. I mean, you can busy your day with appointments, annoyances, things to do, or no thing to do, right? You can busy your day. You do, right? I mean, somehow you go to sleep, you wake up, you conduct yourself, you get through marginally well. You've impressed enough people that they haven't hauled you off to jail. You've stayed out of trouble, or you've gotten into some trouble. And you get a good night's sleep if you're lucky. Most don't. And then you're back at it again. Being a dumb fuck poser. Once again. And you can say very little of your time is dedicated by you, deliberately or by accident, to the unrepentant, call it source, though it's not one, of shimmering. Meditation is an invitation, right? Formal forms of meditation or yogic endeavor are invitations, rabbit holes into the observation of shimmering. I mean, you don't do the yogas so that you can get on the cover of a magazine or attract students. I mean, if you do the yogas, you do the yogas so that you can work with your, call it, inner chaos and orient and, in a sense, smooth over or work with the profundity of your energy system so that you become more subtle. So that you can discover what this really is. And for some that discover what this really is, no matter what their style of demonstration is, we might refer to them as an enlightened, as a da-da-da-da-da-da-da, you know, so-called person. But we mistake, you know, in the case of a Ramakrishna, you mistake the shimmering for a very exotic human being. And you think, oh, the exotic human being is what this is about. No. It's about the shimmering. But all the devotees, from generation to generation, make it about the exotic human being, not the shimmering. The loyalty is misplaced. If there's any loyalty, if you're capable of any loyalty, well, it should be focused on you. Not an exotic human being. Though it's fun to have a library full of books that pay homage to exotic human beings. Or exotic places, exotic stories, exotic animals, exotic plants, exotic science, exotic prurient novels.
Nature squirrel, a shimmering could be paid for. Shimmering by itself may be less desirable if my nature is a squirrel. So talk about human, we happen to be looking out of a set of perceptions that say human is it, human is the shit. Let me do the best human I can do, or let me be the squirrel with the most nuts. Whatever. I'm not sure how I connected the two. I like squirrels.
Dudes always want more nuts.
And maybe I'm a little nuts myself. What I'm getting at is that shimmering delves into a specificity based upon how we perceive or the perceptive capacity. We have to find our package of consciousness that's in a sense. Right? shimmering by itself is perhaps attractive only to those who realize that this disappears sometimes. This identity, for some unknown reason, uninvited, disappears and goes, oh shit, what the hell was that?
If you become interested in shimmering during the sentence of your life, then that's, you know, that's the shimmering. You've become imbued or inoculated with a certain kind of curiosity which is not shared by most primates.
Well, Jonathan Livingston and Seagull, not into fighting for scraps on the shore, but more into flying. I mean, that's the analogy that just came to my brain.
You did have a lot of nuts. What did you do with them?
I'd bury some and forget, and then there'd be a bunch of trees that would show up, and I'd feel like I'm in heaven. I don't know.
He'd rush off to meditation in a hurry and forget where he put his nuts. God damn it.
I don't know, I like squirrels.
Now you'd get irritated, and you'd have to go back to meditation again.
Yeah, you can tell by my tail. It flips around a lot, I'm irritated. Too much work. No, but that specificity shows up. It's kind of interesting. It's, you know, you might say a fixation of value. Like mine was spiritually, it had a certain identification with, oh, it's waking up. Wow. I want more of that. Wow. Look, here's how it's seen. Wow.
Yeah.
They're doing it really well. How's that working?
Yeah.
And then catching myself, fortunately, sooner than later, oh, that's the same thing as this over here in a completely different form.
Yeah.
It's not different. So chasing this is no different than chasing that. It's no different than just sitting. You know, which is kind of, I don't know, I'm a minimalist, so I end up just sitting.
Fair enough, yeah. And so, you're, you know, you're true to your nature. You don't have any choice.
I mean, in the sense of that, getting to the heart of it, to the shimmer.
Yeah.
Well, I like that. Well, you said I identify myself as muted. I'm like, but that must be what shamans do. They can switch identifications.
Shapeshifters have to.
Yeah, it's like, today I'll identify myself as human. Tomorrow I'll do an owl.
There you go.
Yeah, we could all do that, but we're kind of just locked into this human.
Well, you know, let's say you've got a whole day to play with your experience. What do you do with it? It's not like you don't go to the arts and crafts store, grab a bunch of ice cream sticks, build yourself a pair of wings, and then run around the backyard. You could, but you typically don't, unless you go to the Omega Institute and go to a shamanic arts and crafts program, then you have permission to do it. And that's why we go to those, because, you know, someone else is saying, hey, we're going to make wings out of ice cream sticks and feathers, and then we're all going to run around the softball field and go, squaw, squaw, and then we'll come back and talk about it. You know, and if that's not enough, shortly there'll be dinner. And then David Darling's going to play the cello.
Oh, is he up there?
If I stay here any longer, I'm going to get a Woody. Yeah, tomorrow morning I'm going to get a massage, then I'm going to hit the lake. I love it here.
I'm going to Omega.
I love it here.
It's good.
Yeah, tomorrow we're going to talk about the great turtle and axiotonic pineal gland activation from the Pleiades, led by Jean Ong.
Channeling.
Then the bus leaves for Miami, where we're going to swim with dolphins. Then we're taking a flight straight to Phoenix, and we're going to commune with the vortices in Sedona. Then everyone gets a high colonic and a green juice. And then we're going to take an electric car to the coast of California and go hunting for blue whales and kayaks.
All right.
You coming?
Is this...
your vacation?
My honeymoon.
Describing what I would consider like the perfect life.
Just
like, I'm not doing it. Like, I won the lottery.
It's a buffet. It's a buffet of a pursuit.
No, I'll take it. I'll mean it.
Your dance partner is the world.
Then we're going to go skiing, you know, in the high mountains of Colorado. And then to a Byron Katie retreat in Missoula.
And then we go to South America for some ayahuasca.
Yeah, that's right. So we're taking the Amtrak down to Peru. We're going to suck down some ayahuasca. We'll talk about that. Right. Then it's lunch without Yashanti at a sushi restaurant. And Mukti is serving the sake.
But, you know, what you're doing is kind of reformulating what our experience is anyway. You're kind of just presenting it in another manner.
Why is it that we don't thrill it? You know, rolling out of bed, taking a shower, showing up at those big buildings, and meeting with those other people, lunch in the fridge, and log on.
We transform every day, many times. I mean,
who's to say that's not as awesome as being just described?
Or we could run around with little dinosaur outfits and fall or do else.
We could do that.
That's next week, right? I'm going to go buy my dinosaur shirt.
I envision a mobile, and all these activities come from this one line, and one holding, and it just goes into a million things, and then back to the line. An infinite possibility.
Open a booth at Rice's Flea Market and give away dollars. Charge 50 cents for a dollar.
Oh, shit.
It'd be interesting to see how many people would be willing to give you 50 cents for a dollar.
I do need quarters a lot.
One to a customer.
Right, but the quarters have to be pre-1963, right?
Good for that.
Then you're in the bus. They're silver. So where does this taking it seriously come from? Yeah, I have a playful nature that sort of is an antidote to this intensely serious, serious, serious being that shows up now and then. That's all. It's like, holy cow.
That would be interesting to do that. To take, like, you know, a few $100 and, you know, go to Rice's Market. How much does it cost to rent a stand? And give away 50 cents for,
like, 20 bucks for a day.
That's right. People would be puzzled, like, what's in, what's going on here?
You get to be filmed. You have to be filmed. That could be, like, the next show on TV. I should give that idea to my son.
See, I bet people, myself, start thinking, oh my God, the currency's about to collapse. Paper money's worthless. That's why they're doing this. They're collecting all the
money.
That's
metal. Right. They come up with reasons, right?
Yeah,
I know what they have to do. Besides just paying 50 cents, they have to put a reason why this is happening and put it in the box. You know? And at the end of the day, you know, it's, you know, with the best made up answer wins, you know, something bigger. Again, the imagination is happening all over the place. Value, you know, and playing with the equal or unequal. Wait a minute, you mean it's going out more than it's coming in? What do you mean?
Look what the shimmering is capable of.
Can we wind up in Disney World?
Yeah, sure. Plot the vacation? Look how much time we spend in compensatory, right, self-medicating behaviors, no crime, rather than run around the backyard in feathers, right? A tremendous amount of our caloric time is spent in fairly useless, non-creative, afflictive.
I'd say 98%.
That's okay. That's sure. Why not? Yeah. Just imagine a human being that can fly to the sun and back in a second is spending 98% of their time more or less saying, poor me.
I've got to compensate.
And compensating.
That starts to get less and less effective.
You'd think.
It's bigger, but it's less effective.
You'd think. Yeah, it would have to be.
Okay,
yeah.
What else is there?
Yeah, and if we're in a relationship where part of the relationship is there's a subtle or energetic agreement that we both remain in hysteria and trigger each other within hysteria, if someone starts becoming, right, unhappy with that, all hell can break loose. Yeah. To get a sense that you are of the nature of shimmering, and palpably immersed in the miracle of shimmering, not necessarily the symptoms or consequence of shimmering, but if you become immersed in the miracle of shimmering, you're going to have a lot less to say. Unless, of course, you're talking about shimmering, and she can't shut you the fuck up. And there is a loyalty shift that occurs. Instead of reaching to hysteria and conflict for identification, proof of being, proof of concept, you find yourself simply lavishing in shimmering. You pull out of loyalty to hysteria, anecdotal, hypothetical reference, and you just start to immerse, kick back in shimmering. If you find it enjoyable, if you find the invitation, if you respond to the invitation.
Hey, do you think shimmering started about 9 billion years ago?
Why would I? Why would I think
no,
that?
Not.
No, really, what's 9 billion years? That's an idea. A go is an idea. Shimmering has very curious qualities. One quality that we play with is that your immediate experience is what's so, irrefutably so, and all there is. Shimmering has another, call it curious quality, which is you can recall things anecdotally and abstractly and pretend as if there were a 9 billion years ago. But there's not 9 billion years ago. But shimmering is really good at painting the halls, including the archaeological digs, whether on terra firma or in the cosmos, for you to come up with a tremendous amount of apparently objective evidence suggesting there was a 9 billion years ago. And here's the proof of it. Shimmering can do this. It's awesome. It can make it appear in your experience that you were somewhere before now. It can even make it appear in your present experience that you're somewhere now, when you're not. Shimmering will kick your ass.
spinning that somewhere now.
I know, it's fun.
Wait a minute. It's like, wait a minute. Somewhere now.
Yeah.
Somewhere now is verifiable. At least that's what my brain is grabbing.
What's presently verifiable about your present experience, as in right now, were there any? What is it?
I'm hearing sounds. I'm responding to them. Even though I don't know what this eye is or the shimmering is. And it happens to be coming from, I think, someplace now, not someplace else.
But see, place and now are right. Those are ideas.
Right.
Yeah.
So then the idea of now is the thing that you're pointing to that is sort of made up.
Yeah.
Any expansion of...
Yes.
Of the no-dimension point.
Any representation.
To dimension of any kind.
Yes, of course.
In distance. Space.
Yeah, of course.
Volume, I might say.
Yeah.
Okay.
Even mundanely, at best, you could say, my brain is interpreting this.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know,
that's exactly
like it's the best you can do.
It's spinning up here. That's right.
In scientific materialism.
Yeah.
It's going, hold on, buddy. I've got now. And I can conceive that anything that's happened before or after is not verifiable. I've got now.
Yeah. But you don't have now, because now has no...
That's right.
My brain's interpreting it.
I'm unpacking it into a volume.
But now, now keeps running away from you. Now continues to evaporate. You can never occupy now.
It's a memory. Now is a memory.
You mean, well, wait a minute.
It is.
No, that's causing another spin.
Good.
I can never occupy now. I could say I could never define now. I can never determine or measure now, or say this is now, without unpacking it in the past memory and future speculation.
Right.
But the ineffable shimmering.
Yeah.
Using my brain.
Yeah.
Is nothing other than now.
Fair enough.
Yeah, undefinable.
Yeah. Now is not temporal. Yeah. I mean, even if you look at your watch, it doesn't stay now for very long, does it? But it never stops being now.
Now is the eternity that defies
can place curious emphasis on, you know, words like indeterminacy, ambiguity, uncertainty. Because if you feel present experience, if you look into it, meaning you're looking into yourself, right? The light of awareness is kind of shining on itself, texturally, as felt experience. You're feeling this. Right? But you can't pick anything out of it. You can't pick anything out of it to be satisfactorily defining. Because anything you pick, like space, time, now, occupy, right? All of these, they're not real, right? They're abstraction. They're representational packets, like a photon is a packet. Anything thought about the ambiguity of your present experience is a representational packet. And not useful, because it can't really... It's not really conveying anything.
Well, again, I've got another spin going on. You know, from the ineffable presence or the ineffable shimmering, there emerges a yin and a yang, you might say.
Sure.
This and a that, and then it goes back and the this and the that. Something causes a wave to go, and like that. Something.
See, once you imagine that there's a wave and that there's a this and a that, or refraction, reflection, divergence, and convergence, then you go and search the author.
Actually, I have no desire to search the author. I see the endless loop, even as those loops come up when I'm hearing something and going, ah, come on.
Right.
And then it spins, and then something comes out of my mouth.
Yes.
That this, what I'm describing, is not something I'm going to seek to get to the heart of it.
Right.
It's a kind of an imagination of phenomena.
Yeah.
There's Nan, and there's me, there's you and me, there's, you know, there's people and so, and but yet it's not separate, it's not dual, it's not. So it's playing, it's like it's shimmering between separation and no separation. What oneness that has no dimension.
Yes.
You might say.
Sure.
And a multiplicity or a field.
Yes.
Of infinite dynamic.
Yes.
You know, vibrational or magnetic or who knows what else.
Yeah. Any of those apply.
Yeah.
Sure.
So it's kind of more like a dance. I'm not really looking for an end.
Yeah.
I'm just kind of like, I grab something and it grabs me, and then I just sort of like this.
Sure.
What is it you're talking about? You know, unscrew it, you know, look at it from different angles.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's the magical power of abstraction and representation. Image creation.
And not to mistaken it for something that has actual substance.
Yes.
Or less stability, you might say.
Right. Or that
primacy.
Or that occurs doesn't necessarily incarcerate you with identity. Yeah.
So, but see, that's what's interesting. Certain things are sticky.
Yeah.
And I find myself go from absolutely nothing pushing or pulling to shit, what is that? And
yeah.
And then it goes back to nothing pushing or pulling.
That's right.
To, hey, I'm sticky again.
That's right.
This and that. And
yeah.
Gotta resolve it.
Yeah, one moment you're sitting in the corner of your cell flicking dung at the people in the zoo. You know, you're chill, you're just flicking dung. And then the next minute, you are running all over the cage.
There was an ape that they'd have to put up glass because they were so frustrated where they were throwing their own shit at them.
Really?
Well, I felt bad for them.
It's a way of sharing.
I knew they were definitely expressing themselves. Interesting analogy. I think we do throw shit at each other sometimes.
Yeah.
About making a judgment about some form that arises as other, impeding, interfering. Again, music that just grates my being. You know, or some sound, you know, that kind of pulls us. To finding peace in something you have no control over. It's an ongoing dance, you might say. To where the objective is not necessarily to make it stop, but the identification with it. You know, it would be nicer if that stupid thing wasn't there, or this circumstance was a little bit more lined up in some way.
When
it doesn't matter, really.
When we assert to reach an improved homeostasis, whether that's biologic or sensorial, location, food choice, gasoline in the car, right? We're operating through, you could say, neocortex and opposable thumb to manage microcosmically, macrocosmically, homeostasis. Preferential, right? Sensorially motivated, preferential homeostasis. And guess what? If you're a microbiologist, you're seeing that every single cell is doing the same thing. But the cell that's doing the same thing without, you know, risk of failure or...
homeostasis.
Responding, you could say instinctively, meaning non-egoically, right? Responding instinctively, non-egoically to homeostasis. Whether that's, you know, ingesting glucose or getting rid of waste product or leaning up against another cell trying to get a good mitosis going, right? or whatever it may be. And so here we are as a complex biologic expression with opposable thumb, neocortex, chattering teeth, and wind power from the larynx doing the same thing at the scale that we operate at. I mean, so your scale is house, keys, clothes, warmth, food, quiet place to poo, right? A place to go to have a good conversation for breakfast. So we're operating according to scale. Because this is the scale that humans have, right, created. Buildings and alternating current, refrigeration, porcelain, electronics. This is the scale that you operate in, but you're no different than, right, a submicrobial impulse within your so-called biologic atmosphere that's doing the same thing at their scale.
You mean that some of those cells might have iPhones and an internet?
Probably. If we have them, they have them.
Right, as above, so below, inside out.
Marconi. Right? Morse?
So, is there peace in this world? This world?
Well, yeah. Right. So, I mean, the pursuit of idealized experience to mitigate or medicate or ameliorate my crappy life is, you know, it's a harmonic of every single cell seeking, operating according to its own homeostasis. So we do that too, behaviorally and in relationship and at work and with our clothing and our gurus, our vacations, the way that we manage our lives, our money, our relationships, you know, what we have, what we don't have, how we try to get what we think we need from others that may have it. It's a radical invitation to begin to remove yourself through no strategy, no effort, no cleverness. You simply find yourself interested in removing yourself from the hysteria that you call yourself and seeing if there's something else going on, going down. I'm picking up what you're putting down. So, you know, it's a pioneer thing. It's a pioneer thing. Like some pioneers, you know, train and get PhDs and maybe get their ass on a space shuttle. It'll take a few, you know, a few days circling the Earth, and what a gift. I mean, what a gift, right? Even if you're in a tiny little floating box and you watch, you're going around the Earth so fast that night and day takes about 20 minutes. You're traveling around the Earth so fast that night and day is what, 20 minutes? Woohoo! Yahoo!
Yeah, I just got this image of going from identifying with spaceship, you know, the container, to simply space. And just like water, but the fish is limited to what fish does, identifies with water, and suddenly the whole ocean is available to them immediately.
Yeah.
Again, my mind is playing that way right now.
Yeah, and look,
space
and look at how profound what we call experience is capable of jumping scale. When you have a microscope, what are you doing? You're jumping scale. If you have a telescope, you're jumping scale. If you drive to Peoria, you're jumping scale. If you take a plane flight, you're jumping scale. If you go to sleep, you're jumping scale. If you take a drug, you're jumping scale. Just like electrons do, right? Electrons jump scale.
Yeah, those radicals, free radicals,
right? They shift orbit.
I'm one of those.
So are you. So is consciousness shifting orbit, shifting scale. I mean, right here, I could see whether this fork has any silver in it if it were marked. But imagine if I was on a 10-foot ladder. A couldn't do that any longer. I'd have another scale. I'd be operating in another virtual world. Right? When you go to the office behind the computer and pretend to do some kind of engineering, you're in a Bardo. You jump scale. If you're watching a Cheech and Chong movie and blowing a bowl, you jump scale. John Lennon dies, you jump scale. You're traveling all the time. I mean, really cruising at high speed. Right now, even in a so-called sitting in the same place, you are cruising at absurdly defying speed. Because the shimmering is quantum entangled. The shimmering is not of a place that creates a volume in which disparate things occur, where it takes light years to go from one thing to another thing. No, 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 no. No, the shimmering is of its own nature, so it's quantum entangled. And you are traveling, you know, at the speed of light, beyond the speed of light, as the singularity which all this is. And this is possible for you to observe. But it's a different kind of cockpit. Right? It's not like jumping a wormhole somewhere outside the rings of Saturn to discover that the entirety of creation does not obey space-time. You can do it at Andres. You are doing it. At Andres, you just don't notice it. So these kinds of bizarre get-togethers are a way of noticing how fast you're traveling.
I thought, well, things appear in what we find is a 24-hour period.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes.
And then you're right. Space. Day, night, 20-minute range.
Yep.
And.
Yep.
So that's a myth right there.
Sure, that's right.
That debunks that myth right there.
That's right. And if you're sitting on a probe that has just passed, you know, Jupiter and turns around and looks at Earth, you certainly can't see whether this fork is made of silver. You're just seeing the tiniest little photonic impulse, which represents all of what we call home, seen from a so-called imaginary distance, which looks like, when it's in the right relationship to the sun, like a little tiny dot of nothing at all. And yet all of this is appearing on that little tiny dot. But you're going to have to turn around and come back if you can, so that you can enjoy it.
It's just Horton Hears a Who.
Oh, it is.
That's right.
Yep, Horton Hears a Who.
Repeat it.
Let's all yell at the same time.
You are living in Whoville.
And that's just like physicality, so it's funny, you know, like I just was thinking, I had a dream where I went to space, I was like a NASA astronaut or something,
yeah.
So I woke up in space as an astronaut, and I was like, when are we going back to Earth, like how long does it take to get back there?
Yes.
And they were like, oh, not long, and then I just instantaneously went back there and then woke up, and it's like, what's the difference? You know what I mean? Is that the same?
Yes. See, we look at the sky as a comforter, as if the sky is a thing, because it's blue. And somewhere between here and looking up, there's a blue thing. And in the blue thing, there's atmosphere like, you know, clouds, dirt devils, sunspots. So we think there is actually a sky, which is a volume, and things appear in the sky like, you know, a snow globe on Christmas. And so if we travel a so-called a distance from the surface of the Earth with the machines that your friends make, we think we're in space. So the canopy now is no longer the sky, it's space, but we're still in a canopy. We're still in a volume. So what happens if you're no longer feeling yourself as appearing in a volume? whether the body, the mind, the room, the planet, the sky, or space. If the miracle of you no longer imagines itself to be a locus appearing in a volume external to it.
Yeah, so then even so, size wouldn't have that relative factor
anymore. No.
Or space.
No.
Or distance.
Right. Right. Because all of those, call them psychic apparitional forms of measure or defining properties, don't actually exist.
That also instantaneously blurs the line between imagination, daydream, dreaming, all of
yes.
those, like, totally, if you're not so obsessed with the physicality.
Yes. Right. Sure, blurs the line.
To say the least.
To say the least. Chaos, chaos, which is neither good nor bad, and it's just a suggestibility, blurs the line. So your present experience, whatever that is not confined to measure.
Sorry, dude.
Yes. Yep.
Should I get some more water?
That's good.
Sure.
Yeah. It's a blur fest. Well, at least that's how I like to play it, you know? That's because that's my personality. It's like it's fun to play with this and keep moving through what we presume are, right, reliable measures of self-identification and reveal how mythic, how blurry they are. And you're still you, whatever that means. Consciousness is still lit up, whatever that is. Shimmering has not abated, whatever that is. But the loyalty that one has in this being the consequence of anything can get very blurry. Most people, you would argue, don't want to feel that. They don't want to dive into how blurry they are. Some are fond of blurry. That's why you can have this kind of conversation. Because you're not in a panic about the invitation of blurry. How many people do you know can have this conversation for as long as we've been having it?
You just came in there? My mind goes with blurry to soft focus.
Sure.
It's that field instead of one point attracting your attention. But the whole field is just simply a visual oneness.
Isn't it? And include auditory and olfactory and the tactile. There's no measure, there's no boundary. It's a field.
Yeah,
here it is.
Disconcerting.
Yeah, if the yoke is not disconcerting, it's not real. It doesn't have any legs. The yoga has to be disconcerting.
Yeah, because you're taken off from your pad of identification.
Yes. Yeah.
And the controls aren't responding to you.
Not at all. That's right.
Wait a minute.
Yeah. If you don't get nauseous, frightened, and pissed off, you're not really applying yourself.
Yeah, but I have a lot more energy because I've taken away the labeling of everything. It has released energy.
Yes.
And because I don't look at things and then, oh, those are, you know, just kind of my mind would go into this descriptive thing about people
yeah.
and things. Now it's just like, I don't know what that is.
Wow.
And suddenly, there's just more physical energy.
Yes. Sure. Yeah.
Right.
Anything can occur. I mean, there was a guy in some guy named, what was his name? Sujata Sunyata, something like that. I think he was a Western guy. And he woke up, you know, something kind of simple and easeful. I don't know. He had a vision of Ramana Maharshi or something. Or Ramana Maharshi came to him in a meditation or a dream and said, your true nature, your name is Sunyata, Sujata, something that just means, you know, the unafflicted, ineffable. And he was like, fuck me, you're right. You know, he got run over by a car.
Oh, no. All blissed out, right?
Years later.
Years later.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, I forget the Ross, California, somewhere near, you know, north of San Francisco in Marin or something like that. One of those lovely little places, you know. He was wandering about being the unafflicted ineffable and got taken out.
Whoops.
He got mowed down. Fucking enlightened guy got mowed down because he was wandering into the street. It could happen to you.
This is what you signed up for.
You're really.
But he did fine.
Hard to say. We didn't, you know, he didn't write back. You can wear your personality with aplomb, with irresistible affection. You can wear your personality just as it is, just as shitty and poor mooded and short-tempered as it is. You can wear it with great affection as you begin to feel that shimmering is running the show. It's just much easier to be yourself, right? Because you're not justifying, you're not complaining, you're not trying to make it better, you're not lamenting over the shitty hand that you were dealt. You're not apologizing all the time for being so short-tempered and pissed off and, you know, able to get under people's skin or just make them insane. You're just more relaxed about it because that's how you roll.
You're not constantly placing yourself in a framework.
Right. You know? Yes, that's right. You're frame free. And so Brahman is wearing you like a sweater. So your persona is not up to you. You don't need to improve it. Change it, apologize for it, get it ironed out through therapy, though that can help. But when you really kick back in the shimmering, it's like it's okay being you, with however many or few friends you might have. But I promise you, not that it matters, that as you relax more profoundly as you, won't know what to make of this anymore.
But therein lies the freedom.
That you won't know what to make of it. And you can still get visited upon by a dirt devil that flings you into an inconsolable acting out. But you can get run over by a truck. Yeah, and it's like, okay, I am inconsolably insane, and everyone's going to suffer. I command it so. Make it so. Make it so, make it so, make it so. And then, okay, you know.
But that's all that's ever is. That's all that's ever going on, so there's no qualm about it. It's like, oh, yeah, of course.
Of course.
What else would it be?
That's right. That's right.
Oh, this again.
Yeah, we all just turn out to be bacterial bullies. Right? Asserting our will.
As long as we don't off-gas too often.
Asserting our will and demands for homeostasis on everything and everybody else.
Oh, that's it.